You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina, and globally at WPVMFM.org.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Plenty of sunshine across the mountains today, a high near 62 here in town. Mostly clear skies tonight, the low going down to 36. On Saturday, mostly sunny, the high 68. For Saturday night, mostly clear skies overhead, the low around 44. Partly sunny on Sunday. We do have a slight chance of showers in the afternoon with a high of 64. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Mabe. Today, my guest is Nancy Calicerto. Nancy lives in Hoboken, New Jersey. Nancy's a journalist. She just recently switched over to posting much of her journalistic work on Substack. So I was interested in talking to Nancy about her experiences with Substack as a way of learning more myself and giving you an opportunity out there listening wherever you are to get a sense of how Substack works. Nancy and I met each other in 2001 when she came to Taos and attended the Artistway Creativity Camp, which I was co-producing with Julia Cameron. Over the years, I kept in touch with Nancy. She attended a few other workshops that I hosted in New York City along with Julia, and she started teaching the Artistway workshops as a way to supplement her income. So Nancy has a great deal of knowledge around creativity, journalism, and now is learning Substack. So I thought it'd be a great opportunity to have a conversation with her. So let's begin the conversation. We'll switch over and pass it off to Nancy, and she will start to tell us a bit about her experiences with her Substack posting.
So Substack has been such an interesting development in the lives of so many writers at this point, and even some artists who are visual artists. I've seen a few accounts that are visual artists. But for me, the freelance gig, trying to stay afloat life. I mean, I'm an income stream person. I have income streams. That's how I can continue to do my art. So I usually have other jobs, editing. I have coaching clients and all that. But Substack is where I express now. So I've had a Substack account for 15 months. I average about 2 columns a week. And to your question about how I use it, it's basically just what I would write in a newspaper column. It's columns that come to me. When I set it up, you have a website. Within Substack. A lot of people don't, but I do. And mine's called Sunshine and Sarcasm. And when I set it up that way, I purposely wanted to give myself a lot of freedom on topics and sort of signal readers to that. So the navigation on top of that Substack website gives me, you know, yes, politics and patriotism or communicating with MAGA. But it also gives me cultural options. I call one cravings, food cravings, because I do occasionally want to write about food. I have one that's called Hoboken because I live in Hoboken and sometimes I want to write about Hoboken. So I sort of wanted that kind of outlet for myself. And I just gave myself, and I also didn't, a lot of people like to fracture, you know, sort of compartmentalize, I guess is a better word. And I just didn't want to do that. I wanted like this one gathering place. So I have mostly been doing, I have about 160 plus subscribers right now who are mostly not paying subscribers. I have some who are, and I'm looking to build on that. So I've been taking courses with an organization called Story Summit, and I'm immersed in that right now.
Tell us more about courses for Story Summit. The reason I'm asking, it's a personal thing. I don't have the same motivation you do. I'm not a journalist, but I do write quite a bit. And I have maybe 1,200 people on my mailing list, which was a mailing list that I started 20 plus years ago and transferred all of it over to Substack. But I don't have any money-making situation at all. I'm just posting things that I like. So how did you study it, and what are you doing in the course that's so interesting? And can you tell us a bit about how that works?
Yeah, so last summer, I've belonged to Story Summit. I've been on their Facebook page and getting their mailings for a few years. I initially got into them because this is a writing organization that's led by people who are at the top of the field. There's screenwriters, directors. One of the things I'm very steeped in is the course I originally took was how to write a Christmas movie, because I think I might have one in me at some point. And the teachers are people who had their movies made into Hallmark movies and Lifetime movies and all that. So anyway, I got into it, and then suddenly I become interested in Substack, and lo and behold, they have a course last summer, Substack for Beginners. And I had started mine, but I had been writing regularly, but I stay within my comfort zone. I can write. I know how to publish the writing, and I knew I had somebody help me build the website, but I was staying within that. And Substack One got me kind of more into the bowels of it. Oh, look at all the other possibilities that are there, and yada, yada. And then they had Substack Two, so I took that. And these are like 3 or 4 Thursday nights, just to give you an idea of the sessions. And maybe 30 people a shot. And this was also last summer, and it got me, it took me to another level of like, oh, there's this thing called notes, and you can write, you should write actually to get into algorithms and so forth, notes, and look at other people's stuff and share it, which, if you know social media and you've been using social media, that's just smart. If I'm on Facebook and somebody appears that never writes on Facebook, I'm always like, oh, where have they been? Like, oh, they're promoting something. But I like it better when there's more interaction all the time. It's just a preference. And it doesn't mean I'm going to not pay attention to that. But I think applying that to Substack, similarly, I started going, okay, you can't just sit here and collect all these likes and then not be reading other people's stuff. And there's a lot of interesting people on here. So I started doing that more. And so, I started to build it out. I mean, I think I had maybe 30 subscribers when I started with the Substack classes. And now I'm at, like I said, 160 plus. So then it becomes, do you want to invite people to pay? And I want people to be able to read my stuff for free. But then there's, when you get to a certain point, you can offer tiered kind of things, and so they offered just recently, literally last week, they had Substack 2 again. I didn't want to take the beginner one again. I don't need it. But they did Substack 2 again, and I took it again. And this time, I was like, okay, I haven't even been populating my food and cravings part, so I actually called it episode 1 because I think that's going to prompt me to have subsequent episodes, right? So that's number 1. And I didn't commit to like the time. I want it to be when it feels natural and just organic. So it's not once a week or, anything like that. But there's a structure there now. There's also, I have to tell you, I was struggling to... They have live, they have podcasts, they have video. I was using none of this, and I kept wanting to. It's like, no offense to anyone who doesn't do it. It's if you're not doing it and you want to, I don't know what the sort of fear, procrastination, let's go to the artist's way on that, right? Like, that procrastination, there's fear, right? So I literally said out loud in one of the Substack classes, I think the first of 3 a few weeks back, to the two teachers, the co-teachers, I said, I kind of need what I give other people, which is accountability. I need somebody to like force me to make video. So they were like, okay, your homework assignment tonight is, to make a video by next week. Ah, what? And then, you know, some things were going on and stuff. And so then I said to a friend of mine, she's an executive coach, I said, I'd really like to talk about just this Deepak stuff going on with the Epstein files. So do you want to just have a chat? And if we don't like the way it comes out, we don't have to publish it. It could just be you and I on Zoom. And then I thought, you know what, this is not perfectly polished or anything, but that's the whole thing I'm trying to get over. So I like what we had to say in it. So I said, you know what, if you don't mind, I'm going to publish it. So I did. I hear from you the same day. So already I'm like, this is a win. Because, like, you know, I literally had said to somebody earlier in the day, I feel like I want to, like, see if my next one should be James Nave, because I had just seen you on Substack. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, I'm not teaching the artist way right now, but I'm coaching people who I met through teaching that, right? And it constantly comes up. And I just thought, wouldn't it be, you and I have talked about so many different things. Why not a conversation about that? So anyway, for another day. But Substack has just sort of, I don't know, it's like reeling me in a really good way. I feel much more inclined to do a structured plan moving forward for it and to have patience, because people who are making, I'll call it real money on there, and not saying I'm not going to stick around if I don't, but yes, it would be nice. I mean, 4 or 5 years they've been on there. So this is a building situation, and I am prone to not always being patient in these scenarios. So I'm going to be patient. I have decided, and I'm kind of psyched, because as the snow's melting, I'm more inclined to get out. I mean, I have proximity to everything. I have proximity to New York City to, you know, get out there, make video. It's kind of an open season at this point.
When you started making the videos, had you had much experience with it, or have you had to learn everything all at once? What's the story on that?
Videos specifically on Substack?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I, for the homework assignment 3 weeks ago, I literally said, Nancy, just force yourself into the bowels of Substack. So I go in there and I see, you know, they have this live feature. Well, I must tell you that I'm a language person. Live means live. So if you go on there and you don't want to share, you don't want to, you know, you don't want it to be live. If you, I feel like, in my context, this could change, but the way I'm thinking of it now, I'm going to spell it all out in a bigger plan for myself. But if I want to do a live, I think it's going to be from, you know, just me, maybe, or if I'm with people or a friend or whatever. But let's say I'm in Manhattan and I'm doing another No Kings protest this month. That's where maybe I do a live, right? Like I just, you know, I make the video because there's crowds on Fifth Avenue and I'm recording them as I'm walking with them. Particular situation, you know, maybe I am talking to somebody, I don't know. That seems to me a good scenario for a live for me. If I'm going to do an interview, it's probably going to be just what you've got going right here on Zoom.
So when you work out in the field, how do you go about that? What do you said you choose the work that you do beforehand, or do you just go out in the field and think of something to engage in? Well, or how do you collect the story?
This is sort of brand new because I've been wanting to explore just whether even I'm on camera, it doesn't matter, but just the idea of visual medium rather than always writing. I love to write. I live to write. That's my first love. But I do 2 columns a week generally, sometimes 1 a week on Substack. That's not going to change. It's the other content that I want to build out. And maybe it becomes something where, you know, I get to a point where I only give access to certain things to paid subscribers. Well, that's what a lot of people do. Right now, I am not one of those people who can get motivated to create content for a dozen people. That's who's paying me right now. So until it grows, you know, maybe then I start offering them other content. It could be anything. It could be a coaching session. It could be a Q&A. It could be, you know, these are the things that I learned in the Substack class. The lists of things people will offer to, you know, and it's so creative that the different things you can do to be of service in some cases to people who have subscribed to you, pay or no pay. I follow a lot of YouTube accounts I subscribe to. I don't pay any of them right now. I do pay for some media because I'm passionate about that. But, you know, we're all in a place where we're kind of looking at what are we willing to pay for? And so I think at this point, I like the idea of saying, well, let's make it worth their while. What do they want to see?
Yeah, I have a couple of people that have paid something on my Substack account. That was early on when I first produced it. And since then, I haven't had anybody pay. I don't have the same motivation that you do. What I tend to do is set the deadlines. Friday, I publish a photograph with a little caption underneath the photograph saying, I took this but on the border between Senegal and Mauritania while I was waiting for a ferry across to go to the American embassy in Nouakchott or something. I have a couple of shots like that. Mm-hmm. And then I post on Friday the invitation to join my Saturday Imaginative Storm Writing Prompt of the Week session, which Allegra and I teach. So it's just every Saturday or every Friday, you get a picture and a little invitation. That's it. And I decided to push my piece out on Tuesdays. I don't know why Tuesdays seemed like it was a good day. And so I will, and I'm generating between 250 to 550 words, and that's it. A couple of photographs. And each week it's something a little different. And well, what happens to me, once I generate the content and put it out there, I just kind of forget about it. And I keep generating content, but I don't generate content necessarily for my audience. Like, I want these people to read this, but I do generate it thinking, well, this might be interesting for somebody to look at. But I'm falling down a bit because once I do it, I forget about it. And then next week I do it again. And
it's
so
very easy to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have the momentum because I'm not really even trying for momentum, oddly enough, but maybe I should be.
Yeah, like a little bit more engagement. I mean, we're talking 10, 15, 20 minutes. I'll in the morning, I'll try to, after I do my morning pages or something, I will look through and read. I would typically do that anyway. I just hadn't been doing it on Substack. I go over to Substack and I go through, and they actually have a button on their left nav that says Explore. You can go to the homepage and read. It'll be filled with whoever you're following. But if you go to the Explore page, and then, you know, there's categories. If you're in the mood for something lighter, you can do that. I mean, there's a lot of people on there now who are, you know, they express in their posts all the time, I'm looking for community with, you know, other people who are XYZ, right? Fill in the blank. There's so many different things, you know, people who are grieving, people who are poets, people who are foodies, people who are, you know, in this phase of life. So, I'm not looking for anything specifically like that. You know, a lot of my stuff is political. A lot of people want it. So, and I'm not doing it for that reason, to be honest. I'm doing it because I that's what I need to write about. Mine's either expression or purge or both. Get it out of me. It's like an exorcism exercise, you know?
So how do you approach the political part? And the reason I'm asking is because I sometimes think I would like to write more pieces about the political environment. I consider myself a liberal. I don't know if I'm progressive or not. Depends on who would label me as that. I find a lot of what's going on in Washington politics is quite difficult to deal with because it just seems so really, it seems so illogical. And yet I also find myself drawn to it. I find myself very interested in all of it. I find myself excited about it. And even though I consider myself a Trump antagonist, I'm very curious about the approach that group is taking and how successful they are, or seemingly so. Mm-hmm. And yet when I think about, well, what could I write about? I listen to Heather Cox Richardson, read mm-hmm. some of the work that you do, because I know you've been a political journalist professionally for years, and I'm not that. So I tend to maybe do some subtle stuff around a poem or some reflection on something, but I don't hit it head on. And I'm just wondering how you managed to walk that line. Now, Heather Cox Richardson has 3 million, God knows how many people on her Substack, and for good reason. She's an excellent, mm-hmm. excellent mm-hmm. journalist, one of the best. I'm there all the
work
the time.
She does, the amount of work she puts in, yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And I don't use that word lightly. Yeah.
So how do you work that? I know your positions are probably similar to mine. I would say you're a liberal, or maybe you identify as that, although you were a journalist for the Fox Network for a while. And I remember we talked about
business.
That. And yeah. you danced Fox Business. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, for me, I think there, I no longer walk a line. I mean, just putting it out there, I'm 64 now. And I've had it with being diplomatic, because you know what? If the journalism field is going to be what it is, and it's exploded and imploded, or whatever you want to call it, and I'm going to write on my own terms on Substack, then I'm going to write on my own terms on Substack. So I've taken all constraints off myself. I use salty language where I want to. Try not to overdo it, because not everybody lives in New Jersey, because New Jersey can handle it, but a lot of people can't. But I feel at this point, I think we've reached a point where we're trying to save a nation. I can't hold back anymore. And so, Nave, I have even gone so far in a few posts, probably not that recently, but in the last few years, to just come right out and say, I've had people, quietly try to pull me aside and tell me that it's going to affect like my coaching practice. Well, I don't care anymore. Not that I don't want the business. I believe the right people are going to make it to me. If you read that I am anti-Trump, and then you say, oh, I don't want to go to her as a coach, you made a good decision. Probably we're not a good fit, because we're not in politics here. I've, over the years, I've been a coach since 2003. So you figure, over the years, I've had plenty of conservative clients, some of them because I was writing for Fox Business for 5 years. People found me there and assumed I was conservative, but it never came up in the coaching, because we're coaching their lives and their goals, right? But, Trump changed that. It's no longer about politics for me and for many people that in my circle. It's about values. The values have changed. He's openly racist, misogynist, homophobic, openly. This is my opinion. It's proven a million times over, right? So now you're saying that it's okay to vote for a president who has these qualities. So we do have different values. Now, do I have an entire family that is MAGA? Yes, I do. And so that makes me particularly well-equipped to discuss MAGA. I know what they think. I know the mentality, it has nothing. It's people always focus on education. I have cousins with MBAs that are MAGA. It's not about the education. It's a different thing. It's a mindset. And there's just a belief system. And then, you get into the silos that everybody talks about. So I just decided that my lane is, my purpose even, is to speak out at this really, really rough time in our history. You know, and so, you know, you have your own way of doing it. Like Heather Cox Richardson is a great example. She's a historian. I mean, my God, she's steeped, right? I am more, there's something a little bit more like emotional IQ-ish about some of what I write, and just like trying to bring it to a common sense place and boil it down for people. I get a lot of my comments from people are like, thank you so much. I thought I was insane. Like, your column's keeping me sane. You know, those kinds of things. Because a lot of them are people that don't want to discuss any of this in their life. And they read me and go, okay, I'm not crazy. Other people do think this way, because I'm certainly not the only one they're reading, right? So that feels like I've kind of narrowed down a purpose for myself. Thanks to the dictator, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I do love engaging my sensibilities around political things. I have an undergraduate degree in international relations. I was a conscientious objector in 1970, served 2 years alternate service.
You're a natural.
I'm inclined in the direction of liberty, liberal, free form, a breathing room. I also like the idea of conservative in the sense of thinking there are some things that we need to conserve. I don't so much think that applies to the political part as much as just to the, but for example, conserve my integrity, conserve my physical energy. So there's a lot of things that one can conserve. So I have been exploring, how do you expand these things a bit? How do you expand the conversations? Like, for example, if I'm in a conversation with somebody who is adamantly opposed to people coming across into the U.S. and working illegally, I will say, I understand your point of view. I get it. Mm-hmm. You don't want people coming across working illegally. I said, but unfortunately, I'm not able to critique that, because I'm one of those people. Over the years, I have worked illegally right here in this country. I've done a gig and somebody's given me $400 cash or $500 cash. I put it under my mattress. I'm guilty of the same transgression as these folks who are coming across the border. So how can I possibly criticize somebody for doing something that I've done? And it leaves the person I'm talking to a bit in a quandary, because there's a very good chance most of us have done that at some point or another. I've occasionally gone overseas and done a workshop. People pay me in cash and I come back. Well, I really am not supposed to do that. I put the money in my pouch and save it for the next time I go back to the country and visit again. Well, what's the difference in that and somebody wanting to come into the country, do some construction work or other kinds of work, and send the money back home to their grandmother? Not much, I don't think, or maybe there is. But that's what I try to do when I'm in a conversation with somebody who's very strong on a point. I tend to find ways to agree with them. So if somebody pushes religion with me, I say, well, you know, if you want to pray for me, I am more than happy to invite you to, please, here's my name. I'll take a prayer anytime I can get it. So that's my approach with people. Now, in terms of writing, I don't know if I have the chops to actually be a political writer, because it must take some nuance. Nancy, you do this. How do you play that nuance so that you get the message across?
I mean, you just explained it so well. So if you were just to translate that to writing, like, even the poetry you know, the melodic stuff that you write and deliver in such a, you know, polished way, maybe there's something in there. You know, like you said, sometimes it's in poetry. I think you were alluding to the fact earlier that it's more covert when you express something that maybe has a little bit of a political, you know, maybe be more overt in the language and sort of express it the way you normally would. So it's still Nave-esque, but it's, you know, it's starting to take a little bit of a turn because you're feeling more strongly about something. And I think, you know, to your point about finding the common ground, I mean, you know, prior to, you know, finally having to, like, you know, preserve some family relationships and just declare that we're staying off the topics altogether. So I don't really talk about this with family. But prior to that, you know, I would say to a couple of treasured family members, I mean, close family members, that, you know, I can't convince you that I don't agree with you. I agree with you that there are certain situations where some people should not be here and that we have a problem. The problem is that they see it as security because they've been told over and over in their media that these people are stealing from them or stealing money from the government that should be in their pockets. So that's a whole storyline there that they see these people more in a, you know, they've demonized them, let's say, where I see it as a humanitarian problem because somebody has, you know, come on a boat for hours and hours and hours in a dangerous situation with a baby and gets here and then works in, you know, I mean, it's cliche at this point to say in jobs a lot of Americans don't want, but in some cases that is true. And so do I think that they should all be shipped out of here in one fell swoop? No, I do not. Should there be a process? Yes, there should. It's called due process. They have already declared they don't want due process because there's too many of them and it's going to muck up the works. Well, okay, so now we're going to build all these camps and just fill them. And they've had all these people, almost all of them have had no due process. We don't even know if they're American. Some people say, try to show their papers. They're not being listened to. So the difference, you know, the divergence now is less about whether you or I or the person we're talking to thinks that people who are here illegally should be able to stay or go. That conversation is almost passé because now they think, you know, we want them all here. Liberals, radical liberals, they want everybody to be able to come in whenever they want. Wide open borders, which I've never believed in ever. However, now trying to convince a lot of people in this country that ICE is doing anything wrong is pointless. They are absolutely sure that ICE is following the rules and not doing anything wrong. And so that's the disconnect now. And so I think I like the idea of the common ground that you're talking about because I think it's important. That's the challenge of it now. Is okay, which thing are we talking about here or discussing or arguing or whatever when we come together? What is the topic?
And maybe common ground is, as you say, a bit passé. I find myself often when I'm in conversations with people, what I mean by common ground is, can we find a ground we can exchange on, even though we don't have political commonality? How can, say, for example, I believe in, for a moment, let me believe into your story. There was a story about, well, I was in the Atlanta airport a few years ago, and I don't have a gun. I'm not opposed to guns, particularly. I have a lot of friends who have guns. I just never have had one because I'm not really interested in shooting anybody, and it would be a mess if you did. And and I probably wouldn't accomplish much, right? So this fellow was in the Atlanta airport, and he couldn't make me as liberal or a conservative. I had a shaved head. I'm a man in my 70s. I could be a Buddhist monk. I could be a general. I could be a white supremacist. I could just be a guy going through the Atlanta airport to Asheville at 6 a.m. in the morning. And the fellow started to engage me, trying to find out where I stood. And I gave him a bit of the impression that I wasn't unsympathetic to guns, but I struggled a bit. But I was playing the guy. And I think what happens to me is I can become a little manipulative when I'm engaging. I don't particularly sit on my ethics all that well in these kind of games that I sometimes end up involved with. And so the guy was fishing. And I finally said, I just fell into this role. I said, well, you know, I don't own a gun. I don't have a gun at all. And haven't had a gun in many years. I used to have a gun when I was a boy living in North Carolina, my shotgun. And I did enjoy hunting. And I can't tell you how many rabbits I shot. And, you know, it was people, we all had guns back then. And I said, I've always enjoyed the gun. I said, you know, I think of a gun as one of the most beautiful pieces of art you could probably ever have. It's, if you think of it, you know, they're gorgeous, they're well sculpted, they function really well, they feel good in the hand. And I said, like I say, I haven't owned a gun in a long time. I just, you know, just haven't felt moved to have one. Although when I've held them in the past, they've really felt good in my hand holding it. I said, I'm sure you know what I mean. And then I just shifted the tone. I said, you know, well, I said, well, and how many people have you killed? And it was like this major shift. And I said to the guy, you know, I've heard the first one's the most difficult. And after that, they tell me it gets much, much easier. Is that your experience? And he started to back away from me, because I had set up this cognitive dissonance. I never said anything. I never told him anything. But I gave him this sense that I suddenly went from a guy that he thought was antagonistic to somebody that would do things that he would never dream of. And it really threw him off. So I'm confessing a bit of manipulation here, Nancy. But it really excited me to create the story like that. And give the guy everything he wanted in terms of me agreeing with him. But then I went beyond where he was into a place that he wanted to argue about, because I was in the wrong in terms of his ethics. And it was an interesting flip. So I'll do things like that when I'm engaged.
What about a recounting of that as a piece that you publish? I mean, you know, it's like, it's sort of argue that you just did it now, right? So it's here.
Yeah, it's there. It's out, you know.
But, you know, other times where you might be doing that, if it's something you do on occasion or on the regular, you know, I can't tell you how often I get a column idea because I have a simple conversation with a barista or somebody I'm sitting next to in a cafe or something. Yeah, I love that because it sparks something and then I can't stop thinking about it. And then the next thing I know, I always tell my friends as a column, it's just swirling around in my head. I need to sit down and get it out. And that's what I do. But a lot of times it comes from that kind of exchange, you know?
Yeah. And I try to think of things that people would conceivably agree to. For example, somebody says to me, how do you feel about immigration? How would you solve the immigration problem? I say, well, if I were sovereign and had all the ruling power, what I would do along the border, I would set up stations where people could arrive. I would set up very rigorous rules around how to become, how to enter, but the rules would be easy. You could follow them. And then I would start recruiting all over the world, inviting people to come and bring their skills to America. And I would make it so easy for them to enter the workforce. And I would double the workforce and double the production in the country. And everybody could be easily legalized. And if somebody came in and they wanted to run drugs and become a human trafficker, they would find the hard side of me. But if they didn't have that and they brought their good stuff, I would create a massive opportunity for as many people as possible, recruiting all over the world, announcing people, come to America. There is room here for your efforts, your creativity, your intelligence, your education, your desire. Even if you don't have a formal education, we can help you make it happen. So I present something like that. And that's rather difficult to argue with but people would argue with it perhaps. Mm-hmm. But if you frame it around the rigor of the rules.
Uh-huh.
So that's another approach. So maybe you're right. It might be worth writing some stuff about that. Now, see, you've been my coach, Nancy.
I love the idea of just, you know, finding the right outlet. I mean, I think of you because met you in a situation where I heard you slamming, doing poetry slamming. That's how I think of you first and foremost in the creative realm. So I think of ways you can use that. But certainly, just like I'm saying here, where writing is my first go-to, and I'm now on Substack, expanding into, you know, a conversation, perhaps a live. We're going to see how that's going to go. I'm challenging myself. But yeah, if there's something that you want to do outside of what you're known for, and, you know, perhaps express in some way. I mean, you've done some really cool things over the years, you know, with your newsletter and, you know, sending out limited series kind of creative expressions. And I think those kinds of things, they organically form in us, right, as artists. And it's something just says, I want to do this, and I want to do it for X number of time. And so then, boom, you know, you just kind of challenge yourself to do it. It provides, for those of us who don't want a ton of structure, it's just enough structure. Let's say you did like a 30-day thing for yourself, right? Then you're going, okay, I have to do this every day because I care that I do this every day because it's a self-imposed thing, right? But it's real, you know, it's real. So it's not a minimized, impact or purpose. It's just something that I like the freedom to create something like that, you know?
Yes, and I'm well structured. I like structure. I like the idea of Tuesday, I have to put a Substack post out. I love the idea of Thursday, I have to submit my show to WPVM-FM and KCEI-FM. PVM-FM is in Asheville, KCEI in Taos. And I respond well to that, though, to that structure. And it's really, really interesting to have conversations like this and use these kinds of conversations to inspire me, and then hopefully others listen in, because basically a radio show or a Substack podcast or a subcast, I guess people might start to call it, it's a way for people to eavesdrop.
Yeah. Well, and also it's almost full circle to the Substack conversation that we were having earlier. Think about Substack, that's so wild, since I went into the intricate parts of it recently. When I put up the Zoom conversation I had with my executive coach friend, so that was the first one I put up. When I went in to do that, it literally has options on the side. Do you want to set this up so every time you put these up, it automatically loads into your YouTube channel? Do you want to set it up so that it goes straight to a feed and it's a podcast, I'm like, whoa, yeah, probably eventually. But, it, you know, to start off, I'm like, all right, let me just put this on Substack and see where it goes. But it makes it so easy. I mean, easy is a relative term, right? I mean, for me, it's just, it's sort of, okay, that all that. I can't tell you how many times I've thought to myself, man, if I just had, you know, the extra cash to just hire a kid. Like, I've suddenly, I don't have children. I never had a desire to go down that road. But I got to tell you, I'm a little jealous of people that have, like, a teen to 25-year-old kid that will set up their systems for them. Because producing, editing, all that stuff, I've been very resistant to learning it. And that's what I'm forcing myself to do now. Rather than say, okay, who can I hire to do this? What? Every time I want to put up a video, I'm going to have to, like, you know, reel this kid in and say, could you edit this for me? Could you do that? You know, like, learn to do it yourself. I mean, it's going to be basic, but most people that are out there doing this, it's basic. I mean, that's just what people like that. That's what's expected in a lot of cases now. So, you know, I try to get past all the, you know, I have a very, you know, I grew up in a very kind of judgy atmosphere. And so I've done a lot to work through it, but it's, you know, it's still, it's like being a former Catholic. There's just stuff that lingers from that kind of upbringing. And so, you know, I have these conversations with myself where I'm like, okay, so you're not getting a haircut till next week. You can still do a video. It's okay. You know, everything has to be perfect all the time. You know, these are the kinds of things that I'm starting to just push through and say, okay, just do it. People are going to be more focused on what's coming out of your mouth, what you're talking about, what you're expressing. That, like you said, might inspire them to do something. I would love to know that somebody said, wow, I never thought of that. Let me try that. And it got pushed them through some kind of block, you know?
I think you have a good chance of doing that. I have a good chance of doing that if you keep going out there publicly. And one of the things that I've had an opportunity to do over the years is to broadcast publicly on stages, in conferences, at workshops. And after a while, I've become so accustomed to the volume. I'm less concerned about each piece, less concerned about what people will think, even to the point where I sometimes think, and this may be quite accurate, it's very difficult to get anybody to listen to you. So you worry so much about what will people think. And the real worry is, well, will anybody ever think anything? Because that's they right. won't see you. So
there's a lot of that concern among people, including me. You know, I a guy that I know from my days in sports writing is doing a journalism podcast right now. And I've only listened to one episode and he's got like, gosh, many at this point. And he wrote and said, is there something else I could be doing? And I said, it's not that. It's when to fit podcasts into my life. Like, I don't commute. I don't have a car. I don't even commute into the city on a subway or anything anymore. So those are the times I think a lot of people do listen to podcasts. So I'm starting to think of ways to restructure my life. I said to him, you know, when we clear all the snow and I start doing more long walks, there's a chance that's, you know, the podcast thing is going to be kind of keeping me company. I think, you know, it's circumstances for people to consume. They're now in a place where it's like, am I consuming news? Well, I can't take much more news today. So let me go to something ridiculous, entertaining, you know, out there. Of course, there's sports and things like that. But to your other point about, you know, producing stuff, I have to say that one of the best things about starting my career as a sports writer was having beats. There were high school and college beats where I was pretty much out every day covering something. So you're only as good as your last piece becomes yesterday right? So now I get, I'm in a game. I can't worry about what was in the paper this morning. Now I'm in a new game this afternoon. It's got to be written by tomorrow. And it's a daily paper. So boom, 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 here comes another. And not to say some pieces weren't special. You know, I've read a column once a week. I had for a while, I had a front page Sunday column in the sports section, and that was quite a treat and an honor. And so then you're, you know, you're platforming something bigger, person, issue, whatever it might be. But for the most part, yeah, cranking out stuff, you just don't know who's reading it. I mean, you kind of do, because you go into Substack, I can tell you everybody that's, you know, watched the video that I did last week, read the column, can't see whether they read it all the way through, but I can see that they clicked on it. And that's helpful. I like to see, you know, who I'm keeping engaged. Some people I don't even know, so there's no way to gauge, but some of them I do.
Well, it's really an intriguing conversation. I'm watching my clock right now, and you and I have been talking for 48 minutes.
Wow.
How fast does that go? I have about 1,000 more questions I want to engage. Unfortunately, the top of the hour comes, because this is a radio show, and it has to land at 56 minutes. So that means our time is limited to about 5 more minutes. With that in mind, tell us how to get in touch with you, how people can engage in your Substack work, what you'd like for folks to know as they think about working in this political environment when everything is going on and it's very disruptive, and yet it's a great time to be creative, to make things happen. So give us some contact information.
Okay, so my Substack is called Sunshine and Sarcasm. I cleverly, but maybe not so wisely, made a plus sign the end. So it's Sunshine plus Sarcasm, no space. So finding me on there, people have told me is a little challenging, but once you find it, you're there. So it's Sunshine and Sarcasm, but my name obviously also pops up. That's really the best way. I also am on Instagram and Facebook. I'm very active on both of those. Nancy Calicerto, full name, on Facebook. Nancola _ writer on Instagram. I do post teasers to my columns on there, because I do get a few writers. Readers, most of them do come from Substack app itself. Within Substack, where they get an email. Obviously, Substack sends out emails, and they read them, and you can kind of gauge that. But I feel like, that's you know, my basic thing. I'm all over the place, and I really have come to the place where I feel like I'm either somebody's cup of tea or I'm not, and being really comfortable with that is the key to the whole political writing thing, because you're going to get ripped to shreds by some people, and you just have to be okay with that. Like, you have to have the emotional maturity to handle it. I try to go in and have dialogue with almost everybody, unless they're nasty or clearly a troll or a bot. But.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And why don't we try to do this a little bit more often? What do you think?
I like that idea. I think I'm now entering a Substack forum over the next few months with those same people I was in class with. So I might have a lot more to share then, Nabe. Who knows?
All right. Well, I'll invite you back. But meanwhile, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
And there you go, my friends. Thus concludes my conversation with Nancy Calicerto. I hope you know a bit more about Substack than you did before Nancy and I had this conversation. You've probably heard many people criticizing the digital space because it's so crowded and confusing, and that is true. The flip side is that it provides us all with many learning opportunities if we choose to manage those opportunities Substack is a good example of that. The best way to deal with all of that brouhaha that you run across in the digital space is to slow down, look at one thing, work around it a bit, keep it really simple, play, enjoy that one thing, whatever it is, one little action to take online. And once you get that down, take a breath, go away, come back later, and do another one thing. And as you move through the one thing strategy, you will find the assets accrue, the knowledge accrues, and you can even pass some of that knowledge back into your analog life, day-to-day life. So all credits are transferable, and yet life can be very confusing from an analog point of view as well as from a digital point of view. And when you put those two together, sometimes it's quite a management wilderness. And yet it's there, it's available to us, and we can use it in the many, many ways that are offered to us. I'm speaking personally. You may have a very different experience. I don't know. But if you do have some kind of experience around the digital space that seems to be a bit different than the trope complaints that we always hear, like, well, all of the kids are always looking at their cell phones and none of them know anything. How many times have you heard that? That is just simply not true. The young people are certainly looking at the cell phones. That doesn't mean they are ignorant. In fact, sometimes people studying their cell phones, looking at their cell phones while maybe they're just mindlessly gaming along, futzing around, doing nothing, they might be exploring the world. It's very hard to say. So on that note, we finished our exploration for today. I would simply like to say thank you ever so much for tuning in to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. Thank you, Walter Parks, for our theme song, walterparks.com, for more of Walter's music. Devine Dial, thank you for managing WPVM-FM in Asheville. Mike Tilley, Robin Collier, thank you for managing KCEI, Cultural Energy Radio, in Taos. I appreciate airing this show on both of those stations. It's a great pleasure to be able to do that. If you would like to reach me, Nave at jamesnave.com. Nave is spelled N-A-V-E, Nave at jamesnave.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you're interested in ever joining me on Saturday between 12 and 1 with my co-collaborator, Allegra Houston, we host an absolutely free writing circle gathering. And we're only there for an hour. And we write some, we talk some, and we enjoy the company of the people who show up. And sometimes they come from all kinds of far-flung places like Australia, South Africa, Rwanda, and lots of places in between. So that's pretty much it for right now, I think. You can get the link to the Saturday gathering at jamesnave.com. And on that note, thanks again for tuning in. I really appreciate it, and hope you come back sometime soon. Till then, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
The radio is an art form, you know. We don't want it to die, and I'm afraid that the people that buy all the radio stations might forget that this is not just a tool to make money. It's part of our society. It colors the way we act, the way we treat each other, you know. It's much bigger than a tool to make money. It's an art form. So, but what's great, what's ultimately the best about it, is it's fun and it's entertaining. And that's all we want to do, is raise that question of, hey, how come we're not having as much fun as we did? We'll be right back.
way.